I'd like you to join me in Joshua chapter number 23. We're starting to wind down with our information from the book of Joshua and with the ministry of Joshua. The Jewish tradition is that he was the first judge of Israel inside the Promised Land, and that he did this job for 25 years. The scripture only tells us that he died after leading Israel for some time, at the age of 110. Now, we know that the Israelis settle into the designated work cycle that was given by God through Moses, called what we call the sabbatical cycle. And so they would have spent the first 6 years, six and a half effectively, in Israel proper, getting things secured. And then in that first sabbatical cycle kickoff, I believe that's when Joshua divvies up the land. And then everybody goes home and rests for the first sabbatical year, which I think fell 1410 in the fall until the following fall in 1409 BC. So if the Jewish people are correct in their tradition that he lived for 25 years, then he would have experienced the sabbatical year of 1403 into 2 and 1396 BC into 1395 BC. 21 years of time in the land. And during that time, Israel should have been spreading out into their territory, into the places that had been cleared out by Joshua and the army, just following God's lead in living in the land. But we find out in Judges that they were not doing it the way they should have. And I think the older that Joshua got, the less the people probably paid attention to doing what they'd been told to do, and maybe started fudging on some of the rules. Now, every 7 years at the kickoff to the sabbatical year, the entire book of Deuteronomy is supposed to be read out loud as a reminder to the people, these are the rules of the covenant. So it is my suspicion, nothing I can prove, it is my suspicion that Joshua 23 may take place at the third kickoff to a sabbatical year in the land of Israel. That is, in the fall of 1396. And that Joshua is thinking about how the Israelis have not got the job done yet. And in fact, they're starting to, as I sometimes say, play a little footsie with the locals who keep coming back into their old territory. So let me first of all remind you of things from the book of Judges, and then we'll read in Joshua 23. We are told in Judges 1:21, the people of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem. So the Jebusites have lived with the people of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. Chapter 1 of Judges, starting at verse 27, Manasseh did not drive out the inhabitants of Bethshan and its villages, or Tanakh and its villages, or the inhabitants of Dor and its villages, or Iblim and its villages, Megiddo, its villages, for the Canaanites persisted in dwelling in that land. Now, when Israel grew strong, they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but they did not drive them out completely. Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer, so the Canaanites live in Gezer among them. Zebulun did not drive out the inhabitants in Kitron, or the inhabitants in Nahalol, So the Canaanites lived among them. They became subject to forced labor. Asher did not drive out the inhabitants of Akkol, or the inhabitants of Sidon, or Alab, or Achzib, or Helba, or Aphek, or Rehob. So the Asherites lived among the Canaanites and the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. Naphtali did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth-Shemesh, or the inhabitants of Beth-Anat. So they lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land. Nevertheless, the inhabitants of Beth-Shemesh and Beth-Anat became subject to forced labor for them. The Amorites, which is just a subgroup of Canaanites, pressed the people of Dan back into the hill country, for they did not allow them to come down to the plain. The Amorites persisted in dwelling in Mount Heres, in Aijalon, in Shaalbim, but the hand of the house of Joseph rested heavily on them, and they became subject to forced labor. And the border of the Amorites ran from the ascent of Akrabim, which is just south of the south bay of the Dead Sea, from Selah and upward. So basically, all over the place, especially around the fringes of the Holy Land, the Canaanites are coming back in, and the Israelis are letting them stay and sometimes making agreements and understandings and arrangements with them. And so it is very possible that Joshua, in his old age, is seeing the beginning of all that compromise. Joshua 23. A long time afterward, when he who is had given rest to Israel from all their surrounding enemies, and Joshua was old and well advanced in years, Joshua summoned all Israel, its elders, its heads, its judges, its officers, and said to them. So this is a special meeting of the leadership. I am now old and well advanced in years. You have seen all that he who is your God has done to all these nations for your sake, for it is he who is your God who has fought for you. So basically reminding them of those first few years when Joshua, at the head of the Israeli combined militia army, just swept through and destroyed the armies and the cities that were the power base of the Canaanites. He did that with God's leadership. And he says, you remember that happened. Verse 4, behold, I have allotted to you as an inheritance for your tribes those nations that remain. So there were some places, especially along the Mediterranean coast, that Joshua did not try to push out, because at God's direction, the Israelis were going to move into the core of their inheritance, and then by trusting God, as they grew, they would move farther. They would sweep outward from their core and take over new territories with God's assistance, because they would trust God to do that. So here's Joshua reminding of that. Along with all those nations that I already cut off, from the Jordan to the Great Sea to the west, he who is your God will push them back before you and drive them out of your sight. See, that's the promise God had given to Moses. God had also given to Joshua, that if Israel will just keep the covenant, do things God's way, God will chase the Canaanites out bit by bit as the Israelis need new territory. So he's reminding them that, I think, as much as 21 years later. You shall possess their land just as he who is your God promised you. Therefore, be very strong to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, turning aside from it neither to the right hand or to the left. Now, I already told you, I think this may be happening in conjunction with the sabbatical year. Sabbatical years kicked off with the reading aloud of the entirety of the book of Deuteronomy, at the very least. And so that might be something very fresh in Joshua's mind as he said that. That you may not mix with these nations remaining among you, or make mention of the names of their gods, or swear by them, or serve them, or bow down to them, but you shall cling to He who is your God, just as you have done to this day. So he is concerned clearly about mixing with Canaanites who are coming back into the region, because Canaanites bring with them false faith, and he does not want that infecting the Israelis. Verse 9, for he who is has driven out before you great and strong nations, and as for you, no man has been able to stand before you to this day. One man of you puts to flight 1,000, since it is he who is your God who fights for you just as he promised you. Be very careful, therefore, to love he who is your God. A reminder from Deuteronomy chapter 6 about the Shema. Hear, O Israel, he who is our God, he who is one, and you will love he who is your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. So Joshua says, make sure you follow through with those words. And if you don't, then this is going to happen. Verse 12, for if you turn back and cling to the remnant of these nations remaining among you. So that's his concern, which is why I think these things are already starting to happen in his lifetime, and he's concerned about it. If you turn back and cling to the remnant of these nations that are remaining among you and make marriages with them so that you associate with them and they with you, know for certain that he who is your God will no longer drive out these nations before you. Did you hear that? They had already been warned that by Moses. Here is Joshua reminding of that. If you expect God to fight on your behalf and to basically push the Canaanites back to let you have new property, you have to live by the covenant. If you don't, you're going to end up with the curse, not the blessing. He won't fight on your behalf, and that's really what's going to end up happening in the next part of our story. Instead, they shall be a snare and a trap to you, a whip on your sides and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from off this good ground that he who is your God has given you. And that's definitely in the book of Deuteronomy, that if they don't keep the covenant, they'll end up with the curse. And the final part of the curse is getting kicked out of the land as non-believers. Verse number 15. But just as all the good things of he who is your God promised concerning you have been fulfilled for you, so he who is will bring upon you all the evil things until he's destroyed you from off this great land that he who is your God has given you, if you transgress the covenant of he who is your God, which he commanded you, and you go and you serve other gods and bow down to them. Then the anger of he who is will be kindled against you, and you shall perish quickly from off the good land that he has given you. So that's pretty clear warning. If you guys blow God off, you blow off his covenant, you'll get the curse, not the blessing. You will cease getting assistance from him in occupying your inheritance. And so the implication that Joshua leaves the leadership with is, you guys have got to do the right thing. Get out there and get it done. All right, so my suspicion, as I told you, is that that was probably delivered at Shiloh in the 21st year that they were in Israel, on the occasion of the third sabbatical year kicking off. That's my guess. And that if the Israelis are correct in their tradition that Joshua lives for only 25 years after they come into the land, that he would only have a small handful of years left to lead the people. Which brings us to chapter 24, which seems to be about the year of his death. And for this one, he makes a special arrangement assembly. Chapter 24, which I think may happen somewhere right around 1392 B.C. Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem. Now, why to Shechem and not to Shiloh? Because Shechem is historically significant. It is the place that Joshua brought Israel to in the very first year that they were in the Promised Land for the blessing and cursing ceremony that had been prescribed by Moses, where six of the tribes get over on Mount Ebal to the north, and they speak the curses. And then the other six tribes get over on Mount Gerizim, and actually it's the blessings on the north side, and Mount Gerizim's on the south side. That's curses on that side. And so they have their blessing and cursing ceremony. So they did that year one that they were in the Promised Land. They also, at Moses' direction, with Joshua fulfilling it, they raised up flat, large stones, which they whitewashed, and then wrote upon at least, I think, the book of Deuteronomy. It may be the entirety of Moses' writings, but certainly the book of Deuteronomy was on some of these standing stones, written on front and back. I am of the opinion that very quickly, because of the weathering danger for those stones, I think very quickly those standing stones were surrounded by a building to protect them, some sort of at least weather top to it to keep it out of the snow and the rain, to allow people to come here on a regular basis to read the covenant for themselves. So this is an historically significant site when it comes to the covenant. And Joshua is clearly worried about the Israelis sticking to the covenant once he's dead. So same thing that Moses was concerned about, Joshua seems to be concerned about. So with that speculation in mind, but with the picture in our minds of the site being the site of the upstanding covenant stones, let's read the text. Joshua 24:1. Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and summoned the elders, the heads, the judges, and the officers of Israel. They presented themselves before him, before God and before Joshua. Joshua said to all the people, "Thus says he who is the God of Israel." So Joshua, even though we don't often think of him in this light, is actually a prophet. And so he speaks on behalf of God very clearly this time. And he tells the story from God's perspective of what's happened up to this point in their family's history. Here it goes. "Long ago, your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates River. Terah, the father of Abraham and of Nahor. They served other gods So they were polytheists. Then I took your father Abraham from beyond that river, and I led him through all the land of Canaan, and made his offspring many. I gave him Yitzhak. To Yitzhak I gave Yaakov and Esau. Now, I gave Esau the hill country of Seir to possess. But to Jacob and his children, they went down to Egypt. And I sent Moses and Aaron, and I plagued Egypt with what I did in the midst of it, and then afterward I brought you out. Now, in just those few sentences there, we have sped over 600 plus years of history, but significant history. Verse 6, then I brought your fathers out of Egypt. You came to the sea. The Egyptians pursued your fathers with chariots and horsemen to the Red Sea. And when they cried to He Who Is, He put darkness between you and the Egyptians and made the sea come upon them and cover them. And your eyes saw what I did in Egypt. And you lived in the wilderness a long time. That's the 40 years. Then I brought you to the land of the Amorites who lived on the other side of the Jordan. So that's the east side. They fought with you, and I gave them into your hand. And you took possession of their land, and I destroyed them before you. So I had you take out Sihon and Og and all of their people, and that eastern annexed territory became yours. Verse number 9. Then Balak, the son of Zippor, the king of Moab, arose and fought against Israel. And he sent and invited Balaam, the son of Beor, to curse you. But I did not listen to Balaam. Indeed, he blessed you. So God basically forced Balaam to bless Israel, even though Balaam wanted the cash that would come with cursing them. So I delivered you out of his hand, and you went over the Jordan, supernaturally, came to Jericho. The leaders of Jericho fought against you, and it's, of course, in between the lines here, lost supernaturally. And then also the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. That's a real quick way to remind the people of those first few years of a blitzkrieg taking over of the Promised Land. It started with the Canaanites being the aggressors and Israel responding. And Israel wins. Verse 12, something we talk about every once in a while. And I sent the hornet before you, which drove them out before you. The two kings of the Amorites, that'd be Sihon and Og. It was not by your sword or by your bow. I gave you a land on which you had not labored and cities which you had not built, and you dwell in them. That's present tense, right now. You eat the fruit of vineyards and orchards, olive orchards, that you did not plant. So that's the situation at this point in history, shortly before Joshua passes away. And then Joshua makes this famous appeal. Now, therefore, fear He Who Is, and serve Him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve He Who Is. So Joshua is clearly aware that some of the polytheistic tendencies have followed and persisted in the history of this family, and that some of these people are worshiping gods and goddesses and not just simply he who is. And so he challenges them, knock that nonsense off. And then he strengthens it. He says, if it's evil in your eyes to serve he who is, then choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served in the region beyond the river, you know, back when Abraham and Terah and Nahor were serving pagan deities up there, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. So he basically says, make your mind up. Pick a side. Now, he's not good with them serving the pagan deities. Understand that. In fact, he would tell them, if you pick that side, you will be dealt with according to the covenant. But what he's finally getting to is this farewell challenge. Pick your side. But as for me and my house, we will serve he who is. Now think about that. The guy is probably 110, because that's when he dies, and this seems to happen shortly before he dies. He's 110 years of age. He may have been serving as leader in the Promised Land for 25 years. His military service goes back 40 years before they came into the Promised Land. He's been serving as Moses' assistant and as the military leader of the Israelis. He has got a long career, a long witness of service to the Lord. And he says, you make your mind up here today, but I'm telling you, my mind is already made up. Me, my family, we serve only he who is. And so we'll pause there and get back into the Word next episode.